Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy
94.9. Good afternoon. It's Thursday, 28th of July, 2011. I'm Dean Beck, and you are on the line. Thank you so much for joining me today. Today is a very big show. We're a little bit sort of research-orientated, a little bit HIV, Hep C type-orientated. Why? Today is Hepatitis Awareness Day. We'll be speaking to Gary Sattell, who is the Community Liaison Officer for Hepatitis Victoria. They have recently changed their name only this week. They were Hep C Victoria, they're now Hepatitis Victoria to encompass Hep B. We will also talk to Shelley Argent about her latest guerrilla tactics in the fight for marriage equality. Lunch seems to be the go, and she hijacked a lunch with the Attorney General yesterday. We'll talk to her about that. We'll also talk to Professor Susan Kippax. Now, she is the Emeritus Professor in the Social Policy Research Centre at the University of New South Wales. She has just returned from the International AIDS Society conference that was held in Rome, and over 5,000 researchers, scientists from social science, medical science. It's a very interesting conversation with Professor Susan Kippax. And we'll be speaking to Vasco Meyer, of course, no doubt. All that and lots more on the line. Of course, your input is vital. We want to hear from you. We want to know your thoughts in regards to the subjects we're speaking about today. This is how you get in contact with us.
Call Joy.
1-300-JOY-949.
SMS.
0427-JOY-949. Email.
onair@joy.org.au.
You want a mail? Okay.
You are on the line with Dean Beck, and today, Thursday the 28th, is Hepatitis Awareness Day. Well, joining us to discuss it and some of the latest developments in this state regarding hepatitis is the Community Participation Coordinator for Hepatitis Victoria, Gary Sattell. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Hepatitis is in the news in the gay and lesbian community because there are HIV-positive men contracting Hep C disproportionately to any historical data.
Yes. It's quite a new phenomenon, yes.
It's presenting its own challenges too.
It certainly is, because it's being transmitted through sex with HIV-positive guys, mainly through unprotected anal sex and things like fisting and toys.
And traditionally this has been injecting drug use only, really.
Yes. Far and away, historically, about 90% of infections in Australia come from injecting drugs, yes. Unsafe injecting drugs.
In other words, sharing needles.
Sharing needles or any of the paraphernalia. Yeah.
And our needle exchange program has done a lot to reduce the Hep C within the greater community, hasn't it?
Yes. It's also done a lot to stop HIV passing into the injecting community,
which in the early days was a major issue.
Yes.
Let's focus on some of the issues of Hep C in our HIV-positive community here in Victoria. What are Victorian AIDS Council and PLWHA Victoria doing to help stem this sort of tidal wave of cases that has come before us?
Yes. Well, we're working together. That's one of the important things to say. Hepatitis Victoria and VAC, PLWHA and PLC are all working together on this. We've done cross-organisational training because, of course, I'm a hepatitis educator. So we've had training from PLWHA to us and vice versa, from us to them. So we've been sort of training together. We've also had public information evenings. We've also, for several months now, even before this, the news of this current outbreak came out, been developing a chronic disease self-management course for people with co-infection, and we'll be starting that in late August at PLC. And if anybody is interested in that, if anybody out there has co-infection and would like to be involved in this six-week program, all they need to do is call Dimitri at PLC.
I believe more than 13% of Australia's HIV-positive also have Hep C.
Yes, about 13.1%. Yes.
So if you're serosorting as an HIV-positive man, only sleeping with other HIV-positive men,
yes,
and choosing not to use condoms because you choose to do that because you're already positive or whatever your reasoning or rationale is, you're telling me that they are exposing themselves to the potential risk of contracting Hep C.
Yes, what we're seeing is an increasing risk of Hep C here. Yes, primarily amongst HIV-positive guys. So, for instance, what we're not seeing at the moment is HIV-negative guys also involved in the same sexual behaviours, like barebacking, so unprotected anal sex, fisting and toys. HIV-negative guys don't seem to be contracting Hep C through sex here. Now, if they're injecting as well, then there's always that risk, of course.
As there always has been.
Yes, that's right, yes.
Do you think there is a direct correlation to the HIV virus with Hep C?
There seems to be something simpatico going on.
Yeah.
And that seems to be based on two areas. One is that HIV-positive guys have a less strong immune response to Hep C if they get it, so they don't necessarily fight it off so easily. So that makes them more susceptible. And the other is that with HIV positive guys, they have a much higher viral load as well, so perhaps more infectious. They're the two areas that we think.
And Hep C is far more contagious than HIV, in the sense that you need a microscopic amount to enter the bloodstream. You don't need the quantity and quality, if you like, that you do with HIV.
Yes.
And its shelf life is far greater than HIV.
Yes, it survives longer outside the body. You don't even need to have enough blood to be able to see the blood in order to for transmission. So, yes, it's a challenging thing to say that it's far more, because I suppose we don't believe there's enough in semen, although we've had two research documents, one that says yes and the other says no. We're really working hard. The researchers are really working hard on that. But at this stage, we're still saying, look, it's still about the blood. It's about sexual practices that might cause bleeding and trauma to the anal and rectal mucosal linings.
How many in Victoria in this latest sort of batch? It's more than 30, isn't it?
In the 12-month period that we're looking at, and there were 39 guys, and 19 of those, there was no injecting involved, and this is where the first really large alarm bell went off, and that their GPs felt that there was sexual practices involved in the transmission of Hep C. So 19 of them said no injecting. So half of them weren't injecting. Now, that also says that almost half were. So we are looking at also injecting in the gay men's community, and we believe with the onset of new drugs that are quite injectable, we are seeing the uptake of injecting as well, and that's a risk in itself, particularly if new injectors just don't have the infection control understandings that they need to protect themselves.
The protocols.
How to look after yourself while you're injecting, how to protect yourself from other people's blood.
But it's more than just that. You're suggesting that HIV-positive men now have to put condoms on.
That's what we're saying. To protect yourself from Hep C, yes, that's going to be the really hard thing that a lot of people need to come to terms with. This is a re-engagement with protective sex, yes.
That's going to go down like a bucket of sick amongst some of them. Gary, tell me what Hepatitis Victoria do, because you've recently changed your name.
Yes, we did, just this week.
Right.
We used to be Hepatitis C Victoria, and we've now become Hepatitis Victoria. That's to recognise the work that we are doing and would like to do around Hepatitis B as well. So we've always answered questions about Hep B, but traditionally our name has been Hepatitis C Victoria. Basically what that does is it doesn't give Hep B the profile it deserves as well. There are 215,000 people with Hep C, and there are around 165,000 people with Hep B in Australia. So it's a significant illness. It's quite a challenging illness in that it needs, if you have it chronically, it needs lifetime medication, a bit like HIV. You can't clear it. And so changing our name also puts us in a better position to respond to it in the future as well.
I recall some 15 years ago there was a lot of campaigning within the gay and lesbian community about hepatitis B and getting vaccinated for that. Mm. That seems to have gone off the radar. Why is that?
Yeah, primarily because most people have been vaccinated. And if there is anybody out there who hasn't, get vaccinated. Yes. Hep A and B, both really excellent, safe vaccines. There's absolutely no reason why any person in Australia ought not to have it. Particularly gay men, it's actually free for them.
And indeed, most practices gay men get involved with would mean it's quite easy to transfer Hep B. So
Hep B is sexually transmissible. It is in blood and semen. So, yes, having a vaccine is the most sensible thing to do.
With the current crises, what is the next move?
Well, Hepatitis Victoria and all of the AIDS organisations are working closely together. I'm also looking at any opportunity I can to engage with the community. So I'll be looking at different groups that are perhaps doing like the fisting clubs and the different sorts of groups, sex groups, and along with Carlos at VAC and the Sexually Adventurous Men's Team. We'll be trying to engage more on that level, but also as the months roll out, you'll see much more advertising and awareness raising in the community. But certainly I'm out there already talking to people in the community and trying to find out what the problems are and how we can engage in a much more productive way.
Hepatitis Awareness Day is today.
It is.
You've got a special lunch on for invited guests. What else is happening around this special occasion?
Yeah, for us, Hepatitis Awareness Day is our primary event of the year. It lasts for us, the work lasts for a month. So we've already been working very hard and we'll continue to work hard in the next few weeks. We have a really innovative program. It's called Street Shot Program. And that is we send out cameras to schools and youth organisations and we have young people go out and take basically photographs of how they see Hep C, how they interpret Hep C. And we have an exhibition at a £1,000 Ben Gallery at 361 Little Lonsdale Street. And that'll be on for the next week. And that's a fantastic experience for us because, of course, young people are one of our primary goals. And so we have hundreds of young people involved and their photographic artwork is at the gallery. So if anybody would like to come along and have a look, that would be very pleased to have them. Today we have lunch as well. I love your liver lunch. because the thing with hepatitis and the thing for HIV positive guys with hepatitis as well is to love your liver. So you can go to www.loveyourliver.com and there's heaps of tips there and recipes and all sorts of good information about how to look after your liver with hepatitis.
And Gary, you also have a special hotline which if anyone has any questions regarding Hep C or Hep B.
Or co-infection. Yep.
What is that number, please?
It's the Hepatitis Info Line, 1-800-703-003.
Gary Sattell, Community Participation Coordinator for Hepatitis Victoria. Thank you very much for joining us on the line.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Call Joy.
1300-JOY-949. SMS 0427-JOY-949. Email on air at joy.org.au. You want a mic?
Joy Melbourne is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse lesbian and gay communities, enabling freedom of expression, the breaking down of isolation, and the celebration of our culture, achievements and pride.
The latest weapon in the fight for marriage equality is lunch. It's a new addition to the arsenal, and holding the gun, the lunch gun, is Supermum Shelley Argent. She joins us on the line. Shelley, welcome.
Thank you, Dean. Hi.
Hi.
Somehow never thought of myself as holding the gun at the lunch.
Maybe it's a whisk. I'm not sure.
Maybe I was holding the floor. But
Shelley, yesterday you had lunch with our Federal Attorney General, Robert McClelland.
That's exactly right, yes. Yes, what I did was I was invited to a lunch that he was attending, and then I put on my thinking cap and I asked the organiser how many people were coming along, and he told me, and I said, can I buy the seats? And he said, yes. So I said, fine, I will have every seat, thank you very much.
You bought the lot?
Yes. And so it ended up that the lunch cost about $5,000, and I thought it was money well worth, well spent, because we had his undivided attention, and we talked entirely on the issue of marriage equality.
So who went to this lunch?
Our parents.
Right.
Predominantly parents, and they were parents that would not normally get the opportunity to speak to a minister or a government leader, and they were very happy to be there, and it was there was a lot of emotion in the room. I don't mean anger as such, but emotion, people telling their stories, and he listened, and I think not only did he listen, but he heard what was said. And then what I did as well was, so that when he left, he didn't then just let it go out of his mind, I had every parent write their story, so that even if they didn't get the opportunity to speak for very long, when he left, he had every parent's story and the history, and so that he had that in hard copy. So that was, I thought, was quite a good idea.
I believe these parents ranged in age from 45 to up to 82 years of age.
Yes, that's right.
How wonderful.
Yes. And I mean, and what was interesting was so many different stories, like the dad that's in his 80s. Now, his son lives in Canada and he plans to stay there until he can come home and have equality in his own country, because in Canada he feels he's an equal citizen. And he's not married or anything, but that's not the point. At least he feels equal. And then I was sort of telling him my story about James being the policeman and having less rights, and he did see the point of that. And then we had a marriage celebrant there who pointed out the fact that you could marry your aunt or your niece, which is pretty revolting, I think, but personally, but you cannot marry your same-sex partner. And so there was a range of opinions and thoughts, and then just everyday parents who were talking about depression that their children experience because they feel second rate. And so the lunch went for 2 hours, and he listened. And I think that was most important.
Robert McClelland was integral to changing many of the discriminatory laws that we had federally.
Yes.
Did you acknowledge him for that?
Oh, yes, absolutely. But my thinking is they cannot rest on their laurels of what they have done ages ago. You need to move on.
You can't do half a job either.
No, that's exactly right. And so you always say, yes, that was really great, and it was. But you still need to move forward, and you still need equality, not half equality. You need full equality, and you need choices and the same privileges and rights as your straight siblings or friends or relatives or whatever. And so this point was, or fact, was pointed out to him quite clearly.
Now, Shelley, this isn't the first time you've used guerrilla tactics to secure an ear of a federal member of parliament. In fact, I believe you're still owed a lunch.
Ah, well, yes, but that has nothing to do with me. You see, the advantage that I had was the date was already set, and I said, thank you very much, I will have that date. But with Julia and with the independents, that still is to be decided. Now, Julia could be like Tony Abbott when he met with the, I think he was a refugee into the country, and it took Tony Abbott over 300 days to finally get down to do as he promised and meet with this man. And Julia, I guess, could take the same length of time. I mean, who knows?
She's already missed the deadline, hasn't she?
Oh, passed it, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, if I was Getup, after paying $31,000, I would be very angry, and I would be knocking on her door saying, hello, when is this?
I'd want lunch and dinner, thanks very much.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Shelley, we've got another Equal Love Rally coming up in a week or so, a couple of weeks, here in Melbourne. Are we getting anywhere, do you think?
Well, I think so, because I attend the Brisbane rallies and speak at them, and the crowds are getting bigger, and even not the last one, but the one before, it was quite a miserable day, and I really thought it would only be myself and six others with umbrellas standing around at the rally, but the rally was just as large as normal, and so I think that shows that people are serious, because you know yourself, if the weather's bad, a lot of people go, oh no, I'll just stay home, but no, they didn't. They came out and everybody marched, and I think with this one, it's the anniversary, I think it's the 6th year, isn't it?
Since
Howard changed the law.
Yeah.
So I think that this time there will be quite a large rally.
Do you worry that we might be getting marriage right fatigue?
No, I don't think so. Well, I don't think the lesbians and gays are, but I think what's happening is it's becoming such a topic that the general population are going, why isn't this happening? And I think this is it. I mean, every time you turn on the radio or the television or something, there is always something about same-sex marriage, and that's the way it should be. Because if we all go quiet and very polite about the whole thing, I think it will then be swept under the carpet and nothing will happen. But we need to normalise this. We don't need to be necessarily radical about how we go about it, but I do think we need to keep it on the agenda. We need to keep talking about it and normalising it.
You're going to use that age-old, tried-and-true method that all mothers use, nag them into submission.
Well, I don't plan to nag anybody, but I do point out the facts loud and clear, and I don't let them wander off the issue. I mean, it's like yesterday when with their lunch, I thought, now, please don't start and talk about carbon tax, because we're not here for carbon tax. Keep to the issue. And he knew that. He knew that we would not be diverted.
Now, only a couple of weeks ago, you went to Canberra with more heavyweights from our community. How did you go with that meeting?
Good. And again, I'm down again at the end of August, and I've already got about 9 or 10 appointments with mainly senators this time and a lot of the new ones. And I think it's thing that we'll do is we'll just keep going down regularly, talking to MPs, being involved. I'm working on getting a fringe event going at the national conference, and I will do as much as I can to make this happen. And I really work on the theory that if marriage equality doesn't come, I will know that, personally, I will know that I could not have done more.
Now, in August, when Parliament resumes, parliamentarians are to report on what their constituents think about gay marriage. Yes. What do you expect to hear from that?
Oh, I expect a lot of them to go, oh, no, my constituents are against it. Because what happens is it's the negatives, and they're quite definite about it. They're the ones that are speaking up loud and clear. And what I think happens a lot of time in a lot of communities, and the gay community is no different, there's a lot of apathy. People work on the theory that my one voice doesn't count, or my one letter won't make a difference, and that's not true. It will. And again, it's like everybody needs to speak up. They need to get their letters in. They need to answer the surveys. And they need to know that, or know in themselves, that they have done everything that they can to make a difference. Because I can't do it, or Rodney Croom, or AME, or Equal Love, or anybody else. They cannot do it on their own. It needs to be a joint effort.
Keep up the great work. And
thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay, thanks, Dean.
Shelley Argent there, the national spokesperson for PFLAG, Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. She continues to fight the battle. Now, I'd like to know whether you are suffering a little bit of equal love fatigue, or will you be at the Equal Love Rally coming up in a couple of weeks? I'd also like to know if you would think that HIV-positive men will now use condoms with other HIV-positive men due to this current Hep C situation. Broadcasting across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming live around the world at joy.org.au, you're on the line with Dean Beck. Last week, over 5,000 of the world's top scientists in areas of medicine, scientific research and social sciences met in Rome to discuss the latest in finding a potential cure for HIV/AIDS and its treatment. One of the presenters at this conference was Professor Susan Kippax. She is a Fellow of the Academy of Social Sciences and an Emeritus Professor at the Social Policy Research Centre at the University of New South Wales. She joins us on the line. Professor, welcome.
Thank you.
Professor, your particular speech focused on some of the challenges faced by people in getting medications to people and getting people to take medications and to stick to them. Could you tell us a bit about that, please?
Yeah, I mean, my paper was about prevention rather than treatment, but of course, one of the things that's being talked about both at the Vienna conference last year and the Rome conference this year is treatment as prevention. And it's being hailed as a sort of, you know, it's a bit like a magic bullet, I guess. And I mean, I think it holds a lot of promise, but I think, as you said, it's about how, if these drugs are going to work as prevention, how do we get them to people in terms of a whole range of issues, from cost to adherence to side effects, but also the impact that taking drugs like pre-exposure prophylaxis, what effect those drugs might have on people's use of condoms, for example.
Our listener will be familiar with PEP, the post-exposure prophylaxis, which is the antivirals that are used to treat HIV to try and stem any onset from potential exposure. But they released research at the Rome conference saying that taking a pill beforehand could almost give you free rein. But it's determined by whether the HIV-positive person is also on medication as well.
There are two issues. There was a trial that was discussed at the Rome conference, which was a trial of serodiscordant couples. So serodiscordant couples were enrolled in the trial, and the positive person was put on treatment. And if that positive person's viral load was undetectable, what the trial showed was within the couple, the transmission to the negative partner was reduced enormously. It was highly efficacious. In other words, within serodiscordant couples, if the positive person is on treatment, then and he or she adheres to the treatment and their viral load is stable and undetectable, then transmission to the negative partner is reduced by 96%. So it's got a very, very high efficacy, almost the same efficacy, about the same efficacy as condom use, consistent condom use. So that's a huge step forward. And there are a number of issues in relation to that, and those issues have got to do with putting people on treatment as soon as they become positive, which involves testing populations regularly, and also, as you said earlier, with adherence to the drug and ensuring that the viral load stays undetectable. So there's a lot of water has to go under the bridge, in a sense, to ensure that within serodiscordant couples this strategy is effective.
Whilst popping a pill is a private exercise and done at home, the concept of testing regularly is quite public.
Exactly. Yes.
And you present that as somewhat of a challenge for some.
Yeah, I think what I'm not opposed to treatment as prevention in this form, but I think what people tend to underestimate is as you said, the social public act of testing. So, for example, what I argued in my paper was that all prevention, whether we're talking about popping a pill or using a condom, all prevention requires changes in behaviour, changes in practice. And while popping a pill is certainly more straightforward and certainly more acceptable to most people than using a condom. It isn't just popping a pill. As I said, in order for this strategy to work, even for discordant couples, people have to be tested. And that testing has to take place. Populations have to be tested every 6 months or at least every year, but people are arguing every 6 months. And there are many populations in the world, many people in the world, who are very reluctant to come forward for testing for reasons of related to stigma and discrimination, for example. And the other issue, I think, that's involved in this is the cost of testing as well as the cost of treatment, which both of which are quite large, and the infrastructure that needs to be there, the health infrastructure, to enable this strategy to work at a population level. In other words, to be effective. It's clearly efficacious. That is, it works on a trial, under trial conditions, but whether it's going to be effective in under real-world conditions with resource constraints is another matter altogether.
Are you concerned that there'll be a false sense of security by some from the concept of pill popping?
Yeah, I mean, that's my other concern. My other concern is the sort of unintended negative consequences that might flow from sort of there's a lot of rhetoric, a lot of what some people and what I perhaps might call medical triumphalism, that rhetoric may in fact suggest to people that the problem's been solved, and we might see, for example, positive people thinking, oh, well, you know, my viral load's undetectable, I don't have to worry about using a condom. We might find that people who are negative think that their risk is much lower because, you know, for example, in Australia, many positive people are on treatment, and indeed the population viral load has declined over time. I think one of my other concerns is that in countries, not just at the individual level, but at the government level, there are going to be countries, for example, countries such as the countries that were part of the Russian Federation, Ukraine, and countries like that, where there's a huge increase in HIV amongst drug users because there's no needle and syringe programs in those countries, and those countries are very reluctant to set them up. But countries like that can say, well, we don't need to do that anymore. We don't need to talk about drugs, or we don't need to talk about sex. We're treating people, and that's all that needs to be done. So in other words, it gives countries a reason to opt out of the more difficult social stuff like, you know, engaging and thinking about sex and drug use.
Are you concerned that for negative people to pop one of these antiretrovirals as a pre-exposure prophylaxis, I mean, these are highly toxic drugs. Are you concerned that healthy people are taking pretty radical drugs?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think that's one of the concerns, and there is some suggestion that these drugs aren't well, I'm not a medico, so I can't really comment on the toxicity, but certainly I think people should pay attention to the possible toxic, long-term toxic effects. Certainly people who are positive on ART, there are side effects of these drugs, there's no doubt about that at all. And for healthy people or people without HIV to be taking those drugs or taking these drugs consistently and over a long period of time, I think would be, I personally think would be very foolish, particularly when they're not as, when they're used as a pre-exposure prophylaxis, as far as the trials have shown so far, they're not as effective or as efficacious indeed as condoms. So I think people need to be very careful about whether they take up pre-exposure prophylaxis, in other words, whether they take antiretroviral therapy as a prophylaxis to prevent HIV transmission, to prevent themselves becoming infected, when there are other technologies around like condoms which clearly don't have the side effects. On the other hand, for people in discordant relationships, for people who have enormous difficulties using condoms, I think, you know, there may be some reason to use pre-exposure prophylaxis. So I'm not opposed to it, but I think people need to be very careful about when they make those decisions and how often they take the drugs. I also think governments are going to look very carefully at the cost of pre-exposure prophylaxis. I mean,
they're expensive drugs, aren't they?
They're expensive drugs, and when the condoms are very cheap, you know, if I was sitting in a finance department in a government, I think I'd think carefully about subsidising pre-exposure prophylaxis, except perhaps in very special circumstances, as I said, when there's clear evidence that, you know, for discord couples, or when there's clear, when people clearly have problems, when particular individuals have problems with condoms. But I do think we need to think very carefully about believing we've solved the problem, because I don't think we've solved the issue of prevention at all.
Professor Kipacs, you've been to these sorts of conferences all around the world for many years. How did the Rome conference compare, and how did you find the experience?
It's an interesting question. I think one of the things that's concerned me, and it's something that's concerned me for the last three or four big conferences I've been to, is there's a sense in which, as a French sociologist has recently put it, that the social has become inexpressible. In other words, with the medical successes around some of these technologies, the social has retreated and has in some ways been silenced.
In fact, you've sort of done a call to arms, have you not, in regards to social sciences?
Yes, indeed. And at this conference, I had a sense that the social... In Vienna, the social just seemed to have disappeared altogether. But in this conference, it appears that there's an increasing number of people, both not just social scientists, but amongst those in the biomedical professions as well, who are beginning to think maybe we need to revisit the social again. So I was more optimistic, I guess, at this conference, that there are more people, I suppose, answering the call to arms, if you want to put it that way. But I think there are a number of people who on various bodies like UNAIDS and WHO, as well as amongst the biomedical professionals, who are actually becoming somewhat more concerned and are turning again to look at the social sciences to see how the social science can complement what they're doing. So I was more optimistic at this conference.
Susan Kipacs, thank you so much for joining us today on the line. I really do appreciate your insights.
Pleasure. Thank you.
That's Emeritus Professor in the Social Policy Research Centre at the University of New South Wales, Professor Susan Kipacs. She retired from the position of Director of the National Centre in HIV Social Research in 2007, but she has published extensively in HIV/AIDS social research, and through her research, teaching and policy advisory roles, she has played a central role in framing Australia's response to HIV. She's currently Joint Editor-in-Chief of the Journal of International AIDS Society and a founding editor for the Culture, Health and Sexuality, an international journal. And she's a member of the Global HIV Prevention Working Group and UNAIDS HIV Prevention Reference Group. Now, we've had this message come through from an anonymous person on 0427569949. It reads, "Gay lobby groups must be careful not to engage in nasty, one-sided tactics or ideas that diminish the aim of their cause. This alienates the broader community and undermines what they're on about. Playing nice is the way to go. Thank you to that person who sent that through. I do appreciate it. I'd love to know your thoughts on any of the subjects we've spoke about today, Hep C and HIV, or whether lunch is the best way to go about lobbying for equal rights, or the latest developments in HIV research from Rome. Up next, Vasco Myers.
Call Joy, 1300 Joy 949. 1300 Joy 949.
SMS 0427 Joy 949. Email onair@joy.org.au.
Making moles out of mountains.
Do you know, I've been...
Vasco Myers.
Perturbed, Dean.
Perturbed.
At the slanderous gossip and innuendo, the rumours, the blatant lies that you and I are no longer once as close
Who's
as we once...
Who's been spreading that crap?
It's... People have been pulling me to one side and telling... We are so much in friendship, it's just not funny.
Any closer and we'd be on top of each other.
Well, that's right. Now, sex... and our natural history.
And on that note,
nudists, Dean, historians, linguists, in fact, philosophers,
cunning
anthropologists,
ones?
Sometimes, contribute their advice and thoughts about sex to cheeky and charming Julia Zemiro. Indeed. Now, Miss Julia MCs a full frontal, six-part series on SBS exploring the past 50 years of buttoned-up Puritans through to sexual pioneers who've helped shape Australia's sexual landscape, Dean, which is a subject, I think, close to your heart.
I landscape all the time.
More than a kernel of interest there for you,
I think. It's a bit more of a love heart than a Tasmania-type look, though, my landscape. Sorry, go
is
on.
It? Yeah. Is it really? I'm a bit manscaped myself at the moment, but it's those weeping sores that get in the way of the razor blades.
They put out pubic hair dye. Did you know that?
Really?
Special hair dye.
For the pubes?
Indeed.
Why?
Well, because it was... certain people were wanting to... I think it was one of those add-on services at the beauty parlour once you had your Brazilian or... Mm. You know how they did those? They went did stars and bunny rabbits and all that sort of
stuff. Oh, yes, yes.
You
there was
that. Bunny rabbits with red ears.
Yes, I've got a funny story about that, but it's only 10 to 1, so I can't say it. late this Friday night, Sex and Unnatural History is a full frontal look, Joysters. At sex, exploring the advent of 1961's contraceptive pill and sex and the concept of sex, Dean, for fun instead of procreation. So, kicking off with the first episode this Friday, The Revolution, Miss Julia explores whether one small pill introduced in the 1960s did in fact trigger a forever change in sexual culture.
Well, women got balls all of a sudden.
Well, they did. All of a sudden, and could act like men, dropping their underwear and just engaging in knee tremblers willy-nilly. A full frontal
willy-nilly.
A full frontal look at sex. The series brings in actors to reenact key vignettes as well as couples who openly discuss their sex lives. Sounds like a radio program, I know. Anyway, sex sells, and I'd wager you won't be able to look away. So that's tomorrow.
And if SBS's PR department is listening, we have put in numerous requests to Julia about her new show, to promote her new show, indeed, on Joy 94.9's one and only sex show, Hide and Seek, from 10 p.m. on a Thursday. So far, we've heard nothing from the public relations department.
But we love you, Julia. So please, 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 if you're driving along and listening to the dulcet tones of Vasco Maya, please give us a call. And come in and see Uncle Dean sometime, because it will be well worth it for everyone.
Sounds like a school kid who hasn't got any friends. Play With Me, that's by
the gorgeous Chloe Latanzi. It sounds a little bit like Britney's Would You Hold It Against Me, except on Valium.
It's very dark. It's a bit... I don't know.
Have you seen the video?
Bunny. It's a bit Boiled Bunny. No, I haven't.
Well, there's a guy sitting on the can squeezing out a turd while she's in the bath.
Oh, do you mind?
And that's the bit that I can talk about.
Oh, she's grown up a bit since Olivia popped her out.
She's grown up and out, and what I mean is, I thought Pete Byrne had finally fixed his face a bit, but then I realised, no, it's just Chloe Latanzi, and not the former Dead or Alive front man, Plastic Pete.
Whatever happened to her father?
She's probably put on the dole somewhere.
No, didn't he go swimming and never return?
Oh, no, that was her boyfriend. All he owed was that was Livy's boyfriend, Chloe's mother's boyfriend.
Right.
He was in debt to $100,000, which is small change to Olivia.
I would have thought.
But no, anyway. A surprisingly shocking Dean, as having one's curiously stained underwear returned to them via the office internal mail, Play Me on YouTube evidences Chloe's first music video. There is, listener, a rubber ducky in there, so really, how bad and dark can it be, I wondered. Access youtube.com. Be warned, it is dark. Self-serving art? Hard to tell.
Is it art? Yes, well, is this art?
Could that be a knocking on the vault from the other side, I think?
No, she got fried. Oh, God, we could be there forever.
I know.
Amy Winehouse,
well,
R.I.P.
There is no time on the other side as we know it. Her net worth at the time of her death, Dean, has been estimated between $15 and $30 million US.
She's doing all right.
She was doing all right, so she wasn't the bankrupt, skanked out drug addict that everyone thought she was. Well, not entirely.
She was that, but was doing all right.
Financially, yeah. She'd won an impressive 5 Grammys, and now with enough in the vaults for several posthumous releases, Amy's joined the 27 Forever Club.
Not the only thing in the vault.
Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin and Kurt Cobain would have no doubt been phoning the Bottle-O for extra tinnies because Amy Winehouse was done with planet Earth. Attempts to make her go back to rehab and the delicate clink of razor blades cutting crystallised substances on shiny and or ceramic surfaces. Like I knew. Trouble, all right. Allegedly, the happiest she's been in 3 years, Amy's fiancé, Reg Travis, says he has lost his darling who he loves so much, adding Amy had been exercising and was in good spirits before she died. Perhaps, Dean, Amy should have said yes, 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 instead of no, no, no.
No, no. Very good, Vasco.
I know.
That's clever.
Now,
I get it.
I think we can learn a lot from self-funded retirees. There has to be an easier way, Dean. I'd do the whole sell my soul to Lucifer thing, but my soul went into foreclosure decades ago. When I'm deep into the dinner at five phase of my life, I want a hot piece of man meat to massage waterproof calamine lotion between my wrinkly toes and give me the Heimcock manoeuvre when I have trouble swallowing my own saliva. Why? 77-year-old Giorgio Armani must be the luckiest old bitch alive, frolicking in Formentera, Spain. I can't wait till I'm 77 so I can introduce my least friends as my nephew. All I have to do is sell a million overpriced gowns to a million women. Sounds easy now. I'll just pull out my so easy knitting machine from my rectum and get on with it. Happy, happy Giorgio.
How much of those designers actually design? I mean, you're in the know with all this sort of stuff. Don't they just have teams of people that throw in things in front of them?
Yes.
And they go tick, cross, tick, cross, tick, cross?
Well, the idea is to get to a certain level where you can have concepts and then you just enunciate these concepts and they bleed into all these assistants and somehow it happens.
Green today.
Yeah, and you might get a pen and just do a few lines on a piece of paper and chuck it
at
someone.
And that's then reinterpreted
as right.
Some fabulous frog.
That's right. So you're just making all these concepts.
And then you starve some... Mm. Prepubescent 6 foot woman,
whatever,
and force her down a catwalk and fully airbrushed.
If they were getting any younger and thinner, they'd be throwing fetuses down that catwalk, I'm sure.
Oh dear, Vasco.
But apparently, there is a new move towards a more the heroin chic look is actually going out overseas, and they're going for the more natural look.
Thank
so.
God for that, Vasco. We
yes.
have to go, but before we do this. This SMS has come through saying
yes.
Amy Winehouse, start again, Dean, put your tongue in. Amy Winehouse was a troubled soul. Don't disparage that.
No, she was. That's
absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. And a very talented person.
That's right.
That.
And I think she was very vulnerable because when someone is that out of it, people can, you know.
Vasco, goodbye.
See ya.
And a very big thank you to all of our guests today, Gary Sattell from HEP Victoria, Shelley Argent from PFLAG, and Professor Susan Kippax, who joined us to discuss the latest from Rome. You can join me tonight with The Apprentice on Hide and Seek. We're looking forward to a very busy night ahead. I hope you've enjoyed the show today. Thank you very much for joining me. You take care. Until next time, keep well and bye for now.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.